groundwork is made up of three sequences of poems. The first is titled Excavations, and those poems are set around and about an archaeological dig just outside the walls of ancient Carthage, which of course no longer stand, in what is now the country of Tunisia. The second sequence of poems is titled First Principles, not as in first rules, but as in first roles, or first leads. And those are poems set in and out of a rather unorthodox Garden of Eden. However, I am going to read this evening from the third sequence of poems in this book, which is titled Journey Work. These are poems that came out of my long, or I suppose come out of my long love affair with Homeric myth. They sort of take their bearings from the Iliad and the Odyssey. And I guess I'll read a selection of poems all from that sequence, but I'll begin with a poem which is sort of related, I guess. It's the dedication poem in this book. The book is dedicated to my husband, John Haney, who's an artist and actually did some lovely wood engravings that appear in the book. But it's because it's a poem about artists, I'll read it tonight, because there's at least one other fine artist here this evening. You bolted the frame of my loom to your deck so that I can weave in all weathers, and carved me a shuttle of olive wood. You warp the loom in rain fine thread and weave without unraveling the wine dark tapestry through which we tack. So I'll read these poems now from Journey Work proper. And I think I'll say relatively little about them. I think I'll just sort of read them and give you a sense, I hope, of the movement of the sequence as a whole. The first is called Front Story. It's in the voice of Phemios, the poet who appears briefly but critically at the end of the Odyssey. At the end of the Odyssey, the Iliad comes back in all its terrible detail. Odysseus slaughtering suitors till the floor runs red as great Scamandros, or rutting, lustful in his rooted bed. I didn't want to tell you, but I have to since he spared me. Islands. It was only after we had been at sea for many days, without a sign of shore. Unfriendly winds had blown us far off course, and we despaired of finding Ithaca, that I began to have the dream of islands. Waking, or I thought I woke, I found myself at the center of an island large enough the sound of breakers didn't penetrate to where I stood. As if once more bound fast to the mainmast of my ship, I listened. I heard the dry wind thrashing in the branches of an olive tree, the litter shifting where a snake withdrew itself, a bird repeating one high note, though whether to chide his foes or warn his mate, I couldn't tell you. But all these sounds without the sea, a recitation without the lyre, afforded me at last no clue, no sense of where to turn my feet to find my way to the coast and you. It struck me it was possible I was dreaming. No sooner did the thought occur than I woke again, or thought I woke, and found myself again at the heart of another island like the first. Again I found myself restrained by indecision, hawser strong, and woke again to the heart of another island. Penelope, I could relate no end of this. All night I woke, to island after island, each one blossoming within the last like rings around a boat at rest. But dawn did come. I woke indeed. I found myself in my hollow ship. I almost wept with joy to see the sea. This poem is called The Ship Examined, and it's in the voice of a whale. If I roll to port, I sight it in my starboard eye. They say the timber snout that furrows up our undersky is but the tip, so to speak, of the iceberg. Our supertidal scout, a gull, but disinclined to lie, rehearses wonders, a kind of reef above, rigged out in kelp-like cords, homunculi, a row of brine-encrusted ports and pilings heaven-anchored. I have heard the Labrador report the calving of a glacier continents away, and, having seen great bergs displacing fjords worth of water, shouldering their southwards way from Pamiat to Providence, reserve my judgment. Dozing 50 fathoms deep, I've watched their grave diminishing procession, upside-down basilicas, or yan, tan, tethra, pethra, sheep. Penelope in heavy weather. I feel that I could weather death if only I could tell you of it after. It's amazing what we've made all right across this kitchen table. But how could I relate beyond the stopping of the blood, the breath, the stopping of relation? That's no country. Perhaps, she said, taking up her glass, lifting her glass of sea dark wine, that's why I spend such time telling you of it now. Sea Dog on Ithaca. I cannot vouch for woven boats. They'll do to carry babes downstream to strange encampments, but give me good tar and timber. So I told her. Still I see her lantern nights. Awake by its loom light, she sits and cocks the seams of her tapestry. Penelope dreams of geese. After a storm, the ocean gathers up its broken waves. A lifeguard, my vocation is to save lives, but no life is saved. Though my seat is made of olive wood, well seasoned, and the timbers square, the uprights plumb, the horizontals level. Far inland, where a grove of trees affords good shelter from the wind, the censure of the Ithacans, I pledged myself to Aphrodite, goddess of love and voyages, the one who lets you save one life at the expense of all the others. Last night I dreamed a quick brown fox had tunneled under the courtyard wall and one by one slain all my geese, the white ones with their craning beaks, the mottled, knobbly-headed one, the little one who always follows along behind, the masked one, and her mate. The girls. Busy in our wake, the sea unravels our wake. They say there are three fates. Clotho, who spins the thread of a man's life, Lachesis, who draws it out, and Atropos, who cuts it. What do they call the one who simply follows along behind, unraveling what her sisters have perplexed? Surely she's most powerful of all. At Dorian, the Muses, encountering Thamyris, the boastful singer, in their anger struck him maimed, left him his voice, but took away his memory. A dreadful fate. But wind and swell are Thamyris, water falling on the water, scuffle of gravel, high on a seaside cliff. When the wind is fair, the sailors say the girls are pulling with both hands. They mean the girls at home, who hold the rope that is by long tradition thought to be made fast to our bows. You who hold the linen cord that's fastened to my stern, do you remember all the patterns you unravel? Wayfarer. At Ithaca my waves begin, who juggle sand, who gather in the rack of land and cast it up upon the sea. This is no common tapestry. I weave them gold and green and gray to the horizon where they break. I ravel in the shuttle's wake. And each day's labor's lost, they say. They do not see how slowly the horizon line is worn away. Some even tide, the night will fail. It is but weft, and day reveal my landfall as you know your sail. I'll read two more poems. This one is called Lookout. I watched the women hanging up the wash and thought, a single line strung taut, the simplest tapestry. Horizon, sky above and sea below. For 20 years I've known no other story. Trouble is, no sooner do you get down to the wire, someone plucks it and begins, tell me, muse of the man of many ways, for a single line is also the simplest liar. And I'll finish by reading a poem called Backstory. It's not the last poem in the sequence, but it is sort of the end of a certain arc, the one that begins with Front Story, the initial poem I read. That poem was in the voice of Phemios, the poet whom Odysseus spares when he slaughters the suitors who have taken over his household on his arrival back from Troy. This poem is in the voice of Cassandra, the prophetess of Troy, and it's called Backstory. You let that damned horse in again, and history begins again. The story flashes in the pan. The ship that launched 1,000 men. The horse will bear, the cock will crow, the rubes will interrupt the show. The show goes on for all we know. The story goes. I told you so. Thank you.